This meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, everyone. This is Elliot Schoenberg speaking, the International Director of Placement. We welcome you to MOCA Mondays. MOCA stands for Meditations on Career Advancement. Today, it's MOCA Monday, it's Monday for congregations on the topic of inclusive hiring. This is part two of a series on diversity, and I'd like now to turn it over to Kathy Elias, the Chief Kehillah Officer of the United Synagogue.
Hi, everyone. We have asked as our guest today to be the Director of Human Resources at United Synagogue, Vivian Lewis, and we'd like to bring her experience of more than 25 years in the human resources area to the conference today so that we can look at not only our own particular needs in terms of the hiring practices for rabbis and other clergy and professionals in our kehillot, in our congregations, but also the legal and overall picture of how you maintain appropriate structures and a flow and a process so that you stay within the law as well as meet our own special needs that are in our shuls. So I have a few questions that I'd like to start our conversation with. I want to welcome Vivian Lewis.
Hi, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm very happy to be here and have an honor to speak to you all today.
Thank you. And Vivian, so just to start off, what are the general do's and don'ts of hiring practices that relate to non-discrimination? What does the law say? Let's start there.
Well, I'm sure everyone knows that there's Title VII and that anti-discrimination laws started really way back in 1871. But our latest laws really hit home with regard to the Title VII, the Ledbetter Law that was signed in. A few years back with regard to equal pay for females and males, and of course anti-discrimination for all of the areas with regard to race, creed, orientation, and a handicap status, the ADA. So there are a slew of laws there that pretty much are saying to us that we cannot discriminate solely based on a personal characteristic or what a person is. And basically, it's kind of like a guide to say that we stay away from those kind of issues with regard to making decisions on hiring and the hiring practice.
Are there, and when you're in the interview process, what are the questions that you absolutely cannot ask?
Well, I would definitely stay away from anything about marital status, children, personal characteristics. These are absolute don'ts with regard to have you been discharged, dishonest, you know, from the service. Those kind of questions. Are you pregnant? Those personal characteristic questions. Are you married? Are you not married? Do you intend on getting married? Are things that you really need to stay away from.
So what's the line between asking someone about themselves that's inappropriate and asking someone, say, about their history, or if they had problems, if you heard that they had problems in a previous position, like where are the lines there of what you can and can't ask about? What's personal, what's public?
So here is really the definitive question, and that is, where's the lines about asking? You can or can't ask some things, but people volunteer information in conversations all the time. So you can talk about who the person is. You can ask them, look, could you tell me something about yourself? What can you tell me about yourself? Where were you? Where did you live? Those kind of things. And people will normally start by telling you about themselves. They will start by telling you those things that you really cannot ask, but they can definitely voluntarily offer that information. So you don't want to get into a situation where you have these root questions, where you're asking where do you live or how many children do you have, but you can ask things like where was the last time we worked? Where was that? You know, you can ask things about how a person got to work. Did they have problems getting here? They can tell you that, no, you know, I didn't have a problem, but I did have to take my daughter to school first. Those are the kind of conversations that you have that you elicit information from the applicant in an interview. So it's not always about the questions you ask. It really is about having a conversation with the applicant that is going to elicit the information that you need without crossing any kind of barriers and without breaking any kind of laws. People normally, in terms of candidates normally come in with the intention of wanting to work for you. They don't come in usually with the intention of what kind of questions are they going to ask me. They do come in with wanting to have that conversation. So if you can start out with a very disarming conversation, you know, about that person's school background and say, oh, I see that you went to Southern California. And they'll tell
USC,
you
right?
That. Yeah, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. USC. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you about that. They'll tell you about their life. So it's really a conversation that I think is the best way to handle it.
Mm.
So Vivian, does this include, you know, you're in the car ride from the airport to the synagogue and the person who's driving is having a conversation with you. Can they ask those questions in that context? Is that, you know, it's a car ride, it's not an interview, or because it's part of the process, is that included as the interview? Where do those informal situations stand in regard to
that? That is a great question. There is no informal situation when that person is still a candidate and an applicant, and you are still in the role of someone that can hire them. You really can't ask those direct questions. You can have that conversation, but you have to remember that you don't want to go over and forget that it is really a employer-applicant relationship at that point.
And what about a follow-up question? Let's say the candidate volunteers something. Let's say the volunteer says exactly what you said, says, on the way to the interview, I had to drop my daughter off at school. Can you follow up with a question as the employer, like how many children do you have, or how old are your children, or is that included in the out of bounds, or once that someone has opened up the box, can you continue to follow through with it?
Okay, so the question about is there a follow-up question when a person says, I have to drop off my son or daughter at school? You say, well, how many children do you have? No, you can't say that. But you can say things like, how far is the school really far for you? You know, do you have to get it? You know, is it really hard to do? She might come up with, well, my husband takes one child, I take the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of conversation.
Right.
That
mm-hmm.
you have elicited the answer that you want without actually saying how many kids do you have.
And we're
right.
staying here in the topic of how you deal with individual candidates, and I want to ask one more question, but then we'll move to how we view that, how we now work with a group of candidates. But
mm-hmm.
staying in that idea of interviewing one candidate, in the process of hiring rabbis especially, we move from having a small group of people, possibly in the very beginning of the process, only one or two people talking to a candidate, and then a rabbinic search committee. And then, there's usually a time when there's a weekend when the candidate comes to the synagogue and kind of meets the whole congregation. So staying with Rabbi Schoenberg's question about which part is still the formal interview process, now we get to where the rabbinic candidate is with the congregation schmoozing at Kiddush after services. And is there a place where if people from the congregation are asking those questions where it becomes a problem, or is that outside of the purview of these kinds of laws?
When you are in a, when you have an applicant that you have placed in a situation where they are meeting a congregation, you know, they are really there and, you know, as a spiritual religious leader for that congregation. That congregation is not the direct hiring person that's doing the direct hiring. They are people that will come in contact with that rabbi. So it is okay for them. They are people. They're going to ask whatever they can ask. But when it is a person from the hiring and selecting committee that asks those questions, that's where there can be an issue.
Well,
but
let's get
the congregation. It's okay.
Well, but so that's why I'd like to then get to the group process, because even that kind of, those kinds of questions, and I'm going to use an example of asking the question about children to a woman rabbi, does start to open up the box of what is it that that people imagine they want to hear, and what are their predisposed biases about rabbinic candidates. So let's go to the whole group process and kind of, like, I'm going to kind of name the elephant in the room, that often our biases and our thoughts of what a rabbi looks like is the rabbi of the past, of what, you know, folks in the congregation probably grew up with, which is, you know, male, heterosexual, married, that kind of thing. So in terms of the whole process of a rabbinic search committee having a pool of candidates now, how do you make sure that you organize your process to assure that it's an inclusive process where you are actually getting a chance to interview a group of candidates who represent the diversity that's probably in your own congregation?
Well, I love the question, and I think it's something that is a challenge for many congregations today. It starts with the evaluation before you start the search of your congregation and what their needs are. So you are looking, as a synagogue, looking for a spiritual leader that has certain competencies, okay, that has certain characteristics, has certain tools that they can give that the synagogue congregation needs. I think if you look at that and not just skip over and say, I want someone that, you know, gives a good sermon. I want, you know, be really adept as to what kind of person that is. If you have a need of someone who, if you have a congregation that's very needy, has people who have to be served in the middle of the night, and someone who's really going to be there for them, you have to look at that kind of competency that says that person is flexible, that says that that person can get up in the middle of the night. Now, how do you ask that question? You don't want to ask, look, you know, would you get up and, you know, are you accessible? Are we going to really be able to get a hold of you? No, you might ask a question like, in your last placement, how many times were you called in the middle of the night? You know, those, you know, you have to really get into what the real characteristics are that you're looking for that meets the needs, the detailed needs of the synagogue. And I think if you start with what your needs are today, start with what your challenges are, and how those challenges need to be met, and what kind of person you need to meet them. Then go into what the future is, someone that can really can develop a methodology to bring the congregation where it should be, and ask those questions very carefully. Then I think if you concentrate on that, you might be able to break down some of the walls with regard to that elephant in the room. It's always going to be there, and you're never going to change people's ideas unless you really can focus on exactly what kind of spiritual leader you're at the core you're looking for.
So what you're suggesting, Vivian, again, this is Rabbi Schoenberg, what you're suggesting is you need to develop, before you ask any questions of a candidate, you need to assess objectively what are your needs and what kind of candidate meets them. And then when the candidate comes, you're able to reflect on the standard and not just on the person who's there.
Exactly. You will be able to look and really be able to decipher the competencies that that person brings to the table, because you know what you're looking for. It's always easier when you're going out to go and get something to know what exactly you want before you walk in there. So it's the same thing. You really need to know exactly what you want. And it's been my experience, when you do that kind of due diligence before going into the candidate selection process, then you will be able to very easily see and pick quickly the right candidate, because you're very sure about what your competencies are.
Let's open up to the group at this point, because you folks are, in all probability, have begun your interviewing processes, or at least are preparing for it. What kinds of things are you coming across that, while you have a human resources professional here, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask based on where you are?
I have a question. How do you best address a question to a rabbi of why they want to change synagogues or why they've been let go?
Hi. I think that you should address it directly. I think that you should actually say to them, why were you let go and why? I believe that transparency is a very essential quality. So that for any, and that goes across any congregation, you want to have someone that's going to be very honest and ethical. So if there was an issue at their last synagogue, then you would want that person to be honest and tell you. So I would just, as nicely as you just said it, I would say it to them.
Any other questions?
I have one. Mm-hmm. What if you came across information on the internet about a candidate that the person had a disability that could affect their ability to do their job as a rabbi?
In each and every, you said you came over, if you came over something from the internet. I just want to make sure.
I found some information on the internet that indicates that one of the candidates has a disability that could affect his ability to do the job as a rabbi. I came across the information after an initial phone interview with the candidate, and it was not anything that he mentioned.
Well, here's the thing with that, to be quite honest. You could not say that you would not hire that person because of that disability unless you have specifically laid out what the core job functions are, in terms of saying that you have to be able to do X, Y, and Z, and if you can't, that would prevent you from accomplishing success at the position. So it would not be something that I would bring up at all.
Okay, so what if I wanted to know how the candidate compensates for the disability? I can't ask that.
No. Not unless you can, and be really clear here, not unless you can elicit that information from the candidate somehow, without really letting them know that you know. And
right.
I'd have to know more in depth what it was for me to really give an example, but I don't believe that you cannot bring that up and ask that question.
But Vivian, as you said, if you are clear about what the skills and the priorities and the responsibilities are of the job description, you can ask the candidate scenarios about how would you handle this, how would you handle that. Would that be a way to talk about it?
Okay, so let's take it one step further. If there was something that was a definite must-have, okay, deal breakers, and that person was one of those, whatever it is that was found, falls into that deal breaker category, so that both the candidate and you understand that this is a must-have. Then by all means, ask the question: can you fulfill this role? Can you fulfill this function? Can you do this task? And if it directly relates to something like that, then of course. But if it's something that's not, is gray, and you're not sure if the person can do it, but you know what it is, but you can't, that's very dangerous in my estimation.
What about asking the same scenario question to either the references that the rabbi provides or to someone from the congregation, like the past president? If this search committee person has this information, can you then go ask someone who's not the candidate the same question?
I think that you can ask a question. It's hard to say without knowing what exactly it is, but I think you can ask a question around the subject matter, to try and elicit anything. I would be really leery because of the fact of this. Whenever you get you're going to get someone that probably is favorable to the candidate, and they might very well turn around and tell them the results of your conversation. I don't know. But I would be very careful in asking that. If it's a direct deal-breaker kind of question, that it's known that this is what you're looking for and this is what the candidate has to have, then I wouldn't have any problem with anyone asking a reference that.
And on the reference, I actually had a question that came up yesterday from a rabbinic search chair. Are you allowed to go outside of the references that someone gives you and speak? We all, the Jewish community is quite small, and your brother-in-law probably belongs to the congregation that candidate is coming from. Are you allowed to speak to your brother-in-law, or must you stay within the references that your candidates have given you?
Well, I can only talk in terms of best practices. I would always try and go outside the references that someone gives me. If there's someone that you know and you can have a conversation with them and say, and you don't have to be specific, the best way to get information is just to say, hey, tell me what you know about Vivian Lewis and her practice of HR. You can get a ton of information with a question like that.
So I guess I need some clarification about the informal and formal nature of that. On behalf of a search committee, can you do that or?
No, I was taking that question as you are a member of a search committee. You step outside of that committee and you know someone that was at the former congregation of the rabbi. I would, and if it's a personal friend, I would pick up the phone, I would call him and ask.
But that is not the formal search committee needs to stay within the references.
Right. I wouldn't put it in the minutes. I would not be writing it up and giving it as a formal reference.
Okay, and so that's that. Essentially, I'm also hearing you say that people talk to each other on an informal basis, but that the formal process stays within the references that are given.
I would definitely do that, yes.
Yes, okay.
Can I ask another question about the disability thing?
Yes.
What if the rabbi candidate posted something online about his disability? Can I ask him about it? Can I say, I saw your posting?
Well, here's a great area that is very prevalent today, and that is
the internet and background checking through the internet and what you find online from a person, and is it their information? Is it yours? Is it anyone's? Is it out there for anyone to see? And is it true? And do you know for a fact that it was posted by that person?
Based upon the information that was given in the posting, I am a rabbi at such and such congregation, and people are starting to notice that I have such and such disability. It had to have been posted by him.
Well, let's think about that. Why in the world would you post that if you were a rabbi?
Because he was looking for support around his disability.
Mm.
It was posted to a what do they call those, like Usenet groups of people with this disability. And he was looking to get some support.
Okay, he was posting
how he can deal with his disability and be an effective rabbi.
I see. He was posting within a disabled community site.
Right. It was a Yahoo group.
Okay. All right.
May I suggest that this might be such a specific instance that you could call Rabbi Schoenberg, who will put you in touch with Vivian, and it can be something that we all kind of handle on a one-to-one basis. Would that be okay? All right.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I'd love for you to call me on it because there's a lot of issues that are attached to it and bears some discussion.
Okay, Vivian, we're coming to the close of our time. I wonder if you wanted to make a summary statement of best practices on the question of inclusive hiring. If you wanted our search committees, what should their takeaway from this phone seminar be? What should they be bringing back to their search committees as a whole?
In terms of best practices in inclusion, is not to make a definite issue of inclusion. It is to have best practices for every candidate, number one. Number two is to be prepared with regard to the type of religious leader you want and to be very aware of the competencies, both behavioral and spastically and everything that a person has to bring to the table that is linked and integrated with who you are as a congregation. I think that those things would be crucial.
Great. And Kathy, did you have a final word that you'd like to leave with our search committee chairs?
Yeah, I do. I think that what Vivian just said is absolutely critical in helping us to create a process that helps us check our own biases and also helps us elevate the conversation to one that is not about our own individual expectations or preferences or understanding or idea of what a rabbi should be, and instead is looking communally, constantly looking communally at what is it that is our vision communally of what we want to accomplish together. And as long as we're talking about the community and talking about the skills and the match that we're looking for, it helps to double check that we are choosing and selecting the best candidate as our rabbi.
Terrific. I think that one of the lines that I like the most in the conversation is that search committees and congregations are not looking for the best rabbi. They're looking for the best rabbi for their particular congregation at this point in their history.
Mm.
And I would like to thank all of you for joining us today. This has been Mocha Mondays, and today our conversation has been inclusive hiring, and we'd like to thank Vivian Lewis of the United Synagogue for being our guest. Thank you all so much for your participation, and we wish you well on your search. This concludes our Mocha Monday.